Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 3, Hiranyakashipu's plan to become immortal, text number 36. Nantar Bahir Diva Naktam Anyasmat Api Cha Yudai Na Bhumo Na Pare Mrityor Na Narayana Mrigarapi Na Not Antak Inside The palace or home Bahi Outside the home Diva During the daytime Naktam During the night Anyasmat, from any others beyond Lord Brahma. Api, even. Cha, also. Ayuda, by any weapons used within this material world. Na, nor. Bhumo, on the ground. Na, not Ambare in the sky. Mrityu death. Na not Narai by any men. Na nor Mrigai by any animal. Api also. Translation of purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Grant me that I not die within any residence, nor outside any residence, during the daytime or at night, nor on the ground or in the sky. Grant me that my death not be brought by any being other than those created by you, nor by any weapon, nor by any human being or animal. Hiranyakashipu asked for 100 benedictions. I guess all the 100 is not going to be covered here, but we get a summary of some of them. If you want to become immortal, then you might try to get the unabridged benediction list that Hiranyakashipu had. Then you have to ask for one more. I won't be killed by half man, half lion. You might be safer at least. Hiranyakashipu was very much afraid of Vishnu's becoming an animal to kill him, because his brother had been killed by Vishnu when the Lord took the shape of a boar. He was therefore very careful to guard against all kinds of animals. But even without taking the shape of an animal, Vishnu could kill him by hurling his Sudarshan Chakra, which can go anywhere without the Lord's physical presence. Therefore, Hiranyakashipu was very careful to guard against all kinds of weapons. He guarded against all kinds of time, space, and countries because he was afraid of being killed by someone else in another land. There are many other planets, higher and lower, and therefore he prayed for the benediction of not being killed by any resident of any of these planets. There are three original deities, Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwara. Hiranyakashipu knew that Brahma would not kill him, but he also wanted not to be killed by Lord Vishnu or Lord Shiva. Consequently, he prayed for such a benediction. Thus, Hiranyakashipu thought himself securely protected from any kind of death caused by any living entity within the universe. He also carefully guarded against natural death, which might take place within the house or outside of his house. Grant me that I not die from any within any residence, nor outside any residence, during the daytime or at night, nor on the ground or in the sky. Grant me that my death not be brought about by any being other than those created by you, by any being other than those created by you. Grant me that my death not be brought about by any being other than those created by you, nor by any weapon, nor by any human being or animal. Hiranyakashipu is quite confident that by his intelligence he can avoid death. So that's called madness. In other words, if Brahma, he's asking Brahma for benedictions from a person who already told Hiranyakashipu that he's going to die. Now, Brahma doesn't want to die. Why doesn't he give himself the same benedictions? It's just normally logical that you're asking someone for $1 million and they're looking in their piggy bank to see if they can scrape up a couple of dollars to give you. You're asking the wrong person for the benediction. So, Krishna says, Savasri Chaham Ridhi Sanivishtu. Obviously, Krishna is in his heart, and this is all going on. He's telling Krishna, or Krishna is telling him, yeah, that benediction, that's cool. Go ahead. That's a good benediction. What about that one? You're covered. Don't worry about anything. Sure. And if he was covered, if he was assured he wasn't going to die, because obviously he was quite nervous, because it says when Prahlad, Hiranyakashipu, was always drinking very strong liquors, always intoxicated, while he was chastising the demigods. So if he was sure he was immortal, he wasn't going to die, why was he drinking such liquors? Whereas Prahlad Maharaj said, Tatsadu manye suryavarya dehinam sadasamudvigna diyam asat grahat hidvatva patam griha andukupam kuto varam yad dari ashriyeta. So Prahlad Maharaj said, Tatsadu manye suryavarya dehinam asat sumudvigna. Udvigna, full of anxiety. You appear to be full of anxiety. You've gone through an austerity that no one could possibly conceive of for so long. You've had your body eaten by the worms and insects, ants, covered by an anthill. And you've gone, in order to get this benediction, you've gotten the benediction, and you're still full of anxiety. So what was the value of the benediction? If someone would have told Hiranyakashipu, as Hiranyakashipu has already told his relatives, don't worry because Hiranyaksha is still, the soul is somewhere, the soul doesn't die, the soul is eternal. Now if he believed that, why was he asking for 100 benedictions? So he didn't die, if he was eternal. So that's called confused. And when you're confused, you're full of anxiety because it's not very clear exactly what's going to happen. Therefore, Hiranyakashipu, we'll find out, conquers the demigods, conquers so many different things to become the lord of the whole universe and to defy the laws of nature, the law of time, which Krishna says, Kalosmi Bharatarshava, time I am. And he's asking who he thinks is the topmost person in the universe, because he doesn't believe in Krishna as God. He believes that Vishnu is there, and he might believe that Vishnu is powerful enough. When his brother wasn't looking, he gave him a kick. He turned his back for a second, and then this beast killed him. He may believe that Vishnu may have some power, but now he thinks he surpassed it by Brahma. But obviously there's something wrong with his thinking. Now, rather than criticize Hiranyakashipu, who's certainly worthy of criticism, we should also think about what's wrong with my thinking. How many times have we heard Deino Sminyata Dehe Komaram Yovanam Jara? How many times have we heard that our body is changing, but we're not changing? How many times have we heard that time is supreme within the universe and no one can conquer time, and yet we're still in anxiety? What's going to happen? Is it on the back of our minds thinking that maybe there'll be an exception to me? Maybe I'm not going to leave my body. Maybe I can make a permanent situation here and progress until one day I can become something that no one else has ever become, whatever that might be. So, how much have we actually accepted reality? Rather than criticizing Hiranyakashipu, who's specifically come to set an example for us, we should try to see that maybe there's something wrong with my mentality also that puts me in distress. Me not acceptance of my eternality or Krishna's existence or the laws of time, the laws of karma. Am I struggling in the material world to get something which I might not deserve? Or am I afraid of getting something which I won't get anyhow? Or do I have other anxieties about how I'm going to arrange the material universe, or how others are either helping me or not helping me arrange the material universe? Obviously, if Vishnu, Lord Varaha, came and fought on the side of Hiranyaksha, then he would have become a friend of the family. But because he was impeding Hiranyaksha's desire to conquer the universe, therefore he became an enemy of the family. So friends and enemies according to what we think we're going to gain and what we think we're going to lose. But Hiranyaksha was simply a little tiny soul within the heart of this big, big body, which actually belonged to Krishna. And therefore the whole idea that he was going to conquer the universe was actually just illusory, because he wasn't doing anything. He was just desiring to conquer the universe, and Krishna was arranging it through that body to fulfill his desire, apparently to fulfill his desire. But if the soul doesn't change, then what does he gain? And if the soul doesn't change, what can he lose? What is there in this material world to gain or lose when you don't have anything, when everything is being done by the modes of material nature, and the material nature is simply gifted to us temporarily by the Supreme Lord? Not exactly gifted to us. We're allowed to fulfill our desires by Krishna's arrangements through the material nature. And when Krishna wants, he puts an end to it. And he puts an end to everyone's. It's not that Hiranyakashipu at the time of devastation, when Brahma and all the souls within the universe get wind up in the body of Mahavishnu, there would have been Hiranyakashipu floating in nothing. I'm still immortal, nothing can touch me. It wasn't going to happen like that. And it's, although he went through great austerity, he was only going to live for one exhalation of Mahavishnu, or in this case, one inhalation, would have been the end of it. So, the point is we should take note and not get disturbed by all the different arrangements being made by the material nature, because all we can do is become an instrument for Krishna. Sometimes people have very nice karma, everything goes smoothly, apparently, for some time, and we think, well, that's very good, they're very fortunate. But that may not be very good. Just like in Ayurveda, there are different constitutions. One of them is called Vata, one of them is called Kapha, one of them is called Pitta. Now, Vata people, mostly air people, air and ether, if they eat too much, even eat an extra samosa or something, then they get sick. The next day they're regretting it. And on the other hand, a Pitta person, if they eat 5 extra samosas, they just go up in smoke. The fire of digestion is so strong that, like Bhima, Rikadara, Rik means wolf and Udara means stomach. So he had a stomach like a wolf. Whatever he ate, it just disappeared. On the other hand, a Kapha person, they don't have to eat very much, but if they eat anything they eat, even if they look at food, they gain weight. And it's a scientific fact that they actually do gain weight. Because as soon as they look at the food, then the mind thinks, well, maybe we're going to eat it, and they send extra insulin into the body. The intelligence sends extra insulin to take out the blood sugar from the body, because they're expecting a new refreshment of it. So that's stored as fat. So by just by looking at food, they gain weight. So there are different constitutions, and which is the most fortunate? Kapha people, they can endure many, many, well, activities which ordinarily would set a Vata person in spin. They could tolerate, for instance, a little overeating, oversleeping. They're kind of immune to many different types of diseases. While Vata people, they're subjected to most of the diseases, according to Ayurveda. And Pitta are in between. So which is more fortunate? To become a Vata and become extra careful in whatever you're doing? Or become a Kapha and seemingly be able to get away with things, and then after a while it all builds up, the reactions, the toxins in your body, and one day you fall sick, and that might be the first and last time you ever got sick. But you were ill prepared for it, because your life was completely irregular, because you never really thought material nature had any sway in any kind of health for you, because whatever you did, you were immune to it. You seem to be immune until finally you get sick, and that's the first and last illness you have, or you get really seriously sick. So that is up to contemplation. Is it better to have a body where you have to be very, very careful and regulated, or else you get into difficulty, or a body where you have no experience of any kind of sickness, and you feel like you're beyond the material modes of nature, and you can do it anything you want, you'll still always be healthy, and then one day it all comes back to you? Well, probably, whatever your body is, it's probably better to be cautious, to have some intelligence, to know that we're under the modes of material nature, we're under the laws of material energy, and whatever we're doing, whether we're Vata, Pitta, or Kapha, we have to be cautious. Otherwise, unless one has some practice of being cautious and Krishna conscious, that at the time of death, no one's going to be prepared. So Hiranyakashipu was really not prepared, nor was his brother, because ultimately they became proud and puffed up, and they thought they were going to control the universe. They thought they were going to go beyond time. But time luckily put them in some anxiety, so that when Hiranyakashipu was killed by Vishnu, he wasn't quite sure it was actually God who was killing him. Therefore, he had to take birth again as Ravana and Kumbhakarna, because they weren't convinced that this half-man, half-lion was actually God. Although they probably were a little impressed. I'm sure he was a little impressed that he's not a half man, he's not a man, he's not a lion. He got me on his lap. It's not in the sky or in the earth. It's not inside the house. It's not outside the house. It's twilight, so it's not day and night. He wasn't created by Brahma. You know, this is a pretty intelligent person, whoever it might be. he must have had someone spying on, when I was talking to Brahma, asking for the benediction. Any case, he still wasn't convinced that Krishna was God, despite whatever happened. So the point is that we should take advantage of our situation, whatever it is, and understand that when things are going smoothly, we shouldn't be complacent. We should understand that ultimately the material world is not meant for being smooth sailing forever. And when we're in distress, we shouldn't think it's going to happen last forever either. Otherwise, if it was distress and we took shelter of Krishna forever, it wouldn't be exactly developing love either, voluntarily. Like Siddhama Vipra, he was in a poverty-stricken condition, and he was quite Krishna conscious. He didn't mind it, but he actually became attached to his poverty-stricken condition. Therefore, his wife told him, why don't you go and ask Krishna for a benediction? So Krishna went, and he didn't ask Krishna for a benediction, but he got a benediction from Krishna anyhow. And he got opulence greater than that of the King of Heaven. But still, now that he got all this opulence, it was an opportunity to go the other way, to utilize all this opulence in Krishna's service without attachment. It's easy, you get custom to live without anything. And you might even become a little proud of your renunciation. But then when you're given opulence, then you have to learn a whole other thing. How to remain detached from that opulence. And that's real detachment. Yasya anugrahami kurishe taddinam shanai. Krishna's first installment is to take everything away if someone's attached. But his second installment is to give them all opulence to utilize in his service when they see that they're qualified. So Sudama and his wife, they utilized the opulence fully in Krishna's service, and they enjoyed it appropriately, whatever opulence Krishna gave, and at the end of life they went back to the spiritual world. It took Hiranyakashipu a little bit more, so we should not follow in his footsteps exactly, but we should be equally in Krishna conscious, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, and not expect that we're going to get some special benediction by which we can surpass the laws of eternal nature. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes. Lo and behold, he has a question.
In Srimad Bhagavatam, it seems that, and in the Mahabharata, it seems that Kashyapa is a good sage, and even Diti becomes a devotee. So didn't they teach Hiranyakashipu nicely when he was growing that it's not good to kill brahmanas and to kill all the fruit trees, destroy all the fruit trees? Do you have any, what was he, I'm wondering what was his relationship with his parents?
Well, I don't know if he had any relationship. Of course he did, but after all, he was in the womb of his mother for 100 years. So he probably was wondering, you know, what are they doing to me? Why does she want to give birth to me and my brother? You know, why is she keeping me here? So there's probably some, you know, a little bit of doubt about the wisdom of their parents and the relationship. After all, if you were kept in the womb for 100 years, you start wondering, you know, does my mother really love me? Does she? Am I an unwanted child? And then after giving birth, after 100 years, I'm sure he didn't take birth as a little bouncing baby boy. Who knows how he got out of the womb? Anyhow, he made it out, but he was the type of person who didn't seem to listen to anyone, even to his parents. So even if he had good parents, that doesn't mean necessarily he listened to them. He was pretty proud from the beginning. Yes.
Those people who can eat 5 samosas or 50 samosas.
I never know anyone who could eat. I mean, someone could eat 50 samosas, but I don't know what's going to happen to them the next day.
But I'm just wondering, where does the energy go? Because there are these, what do they call them, ectomorphs? No matter how much they eat, just doesn't transform into any body tissue,
yeah,
apparently.
Well, Prabhupada said an elephant can eat this much and he passes this much stool. So it goes somewhere, but it usually goes in and out. It's a highway. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Gandharva Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.